And we're back. It's the last. Oh, look at that. We're back. It's the last segment of Channel 9 Live. I hope you are watching. I hope that you tweet and Google Plus and Windows Live and Orkut and what other dead social media should we talk about?
Friendster. Make sure-
Deadpools.
Who? Yeah,
Friendster. There you go.
We're on FriendFeed at LinkedIn. Yes, also. Now I'm going to get email from all our friends at LinkedIn, which is not a dead social network. Please tell everyone to go and watch the last part of CH9 Live. It's at ch9.ms. Because it's the last show, there's no chance that this is going to not fall apart. This entire discussion is going to fall apart. And big ups to my my homie Justin Timberlake at MySpace. Hi.
Hey.
We've got Adria Richard from SendGrid, we've got Ben Wen from MongoLab, and we've got Nick Foy from New Relic. You guys have something in common. You have something in common. You're all available to the people who use the Azure Store. You're all add-ons.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
That's pretty amazing. Nick, I want to talk about what you guys do and go through each of you guys and talk about, and then we'll watch the conversation disintegrate.
Okay, right on.
Plan?
Yeah.
Okay, so New Relic, what do you do and why should I care?
So we're application performance monitoring, which means essentially from the browser to the metal, we can see what your app's doing, and that's live or dev or in production, you know, all that good stuff. Basically, we do bytecode injection, and so we don't touch your CLR. We essentially take the managed code, and as it's IL emitting, we throw some bytes in there.
Wow.
so that we can actually monitor.
So I don't code to you. You use aspect-oriented programming, and you actually change the compiled code.
And on the fly. You got
it, man. That seems not only extremely scary, deeply scary.
Yeah, terrifying.
Why should I allow you to do that to me?
Yeah, so it's a really it's a new kind of picture we have here. For as being a developer, right, we struggle with knowing what my code's doing after it goes over the wall, right? And so now that we're getting kind of in this cloud space, and that's becoming a lot less scary, we're actually needing tools that help us see, help us get like a nice view into what our application's even doing. Like, did I create an N+1 scenario, for instance, in my application when I just released that last thing?
Right.
Well, New Relic can help you see all that good stuff.
Okay, so you are almost like a production profiler.
Yep, that's right. And as a dev, you can use it too. So you can install it locally and profile while you code. So you can actually catch stuff before it goes out.
Do I have to allow you to access my code, or can I code to you if I don't feel comfortable with you messing around with my bytecode?
You can definitely turn down the instrumentation a lot and instrument just the bits you really want.
Okay.
So if like a particular like controller or something is really interesting to you, then you can do that as well.
Now, as a simpleton, I'm thinking to myself, you're going to be like every other line is going to be like new relic.debug, and you're sending all sorts of personal private information across the wire, which is extremely concerning to me because in a cloud scenario, you're not running in my process space, you're sending stuff out into the world.
Right.
Also deeply scary.
Yeah, so we don't actually send personal information unless you kind of turn that stuff on, so we can capture query parameters and all sorts of good stuff, and even HTTP response parameters and stuff. But we don't generally, that's not on by default.
Okay.
And of course it goes over SSL and it's also encrypted and compressed to reduce the kind of the overhead going over the stream. So as far as the scary bits go, it's metric data. So it's almost innocuous unless you have our aggregator on the back end helping you put it back together.
So it's kind of anonymized by default.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure is.
Okay. Yeah. And is that going to slow my system down, or is this done in an asynchronous way?
No,
my work continues.
Right. So there's a thread that spins off inside your application. So when the app domain spins up, it goes, oh, I got something to profile using the iProfiler interface. And it just attaches itself to like your website, for instance. And then we just start sending data out over every minute. So that's a totally separate process. It doesn't impact your front-end threads, and just so every minute it incrementally goes and does a harvest.
Okay, and people can get this just in the store. I have an Azure site. Yep. Can I just instrument it right there?
You can, of course, get the account through the store, and then you just run an install NuGet package.
I love that. Yeah. So it's NuGet, too.
You got it, man.
Okay, that's hot.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So that's available in the store. So I've got instrumentation, but the instrumentation's kind of been outsourced, side-sourced.
Yeah, so to speak, yeah.
Is it being sent off into the world, or is it still in Azure?
It is actually being sent off into, because we're SaaS, and so we collect roughly 18 billion metrics a day. And so that makes things really interesting.
That's a lot.
But they're all, of course, we're SOX 2.
What does that mean?
It just means that we met a certain level of certification as far as security and protection of your data.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is a certification that indicates the security of the data center and the security of the data itself.
We are ironclad.
All that stuff.
You got it, man.
Ironclad. I like ironclad. Cool. Ben, MongoLab.
MongoLab, well, we're very happy to be in the Azure store. We are a MongoDB as a service. So what that means is that if you are using a MongoDB, which is a new NoSQL database, instead of having to go and do your own backups, monitor the thing, though you could also do it at New Relic, and worry about what updates and what's the latest version, what's my replica set doing, all of those operational aspects of running MongoDB, we handle for you. And we handle now for the Windows Azure developer population out there.
Yeah.
And what that means is that developers can stay focused on the most important thing that they do and love to do, which is create applications, create features, make this thing work better.
So I'm outsourcing. I don't know if outsourcing is the right word, but I mean, I'm cloud sourcing.
Yep. Sure.
Right?
Yep.
I'm cloud sourcing my database management.
Exactly.
Are you handling backups and software upgrades?
Exactly.
All that for me.
Yep.
Do I need a database administrator anymore? I still need someone who knows Mongo and knows what they're doing and keeps it tuned?
Well, that's actually kind of interesting. You obviously still need developers that are comfortable with the client, comfortable with the drivers, know how to query and things like that. But in terms of the database administration aspects of it, we handle a big fraction of that. Now, of course, if you're a very large organization that can afford to grow different specializations, then yeah, that might be something that you want to do. We can help with that in terms of we can augment that team.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, you can think of us as Mongo DBAs in the cloud that you can get on demand and pay for practically fractionally.
So I've got a friend who's been trying to get me Mongo all the time.
Yeah.
Just goes on and on about it, and he thinks it's great. And when I mention things like Mongo in the cloud, he always says, well, that's going to be slow. I want it to be as close to my server as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, the reason that we work in multiple cloud environments is to stay close to the application tier so that the latency between the application and the database is as little as possible, as short and as fast as possible. So when we heard that Azure was now embracing open source, embracing Linux, embracing things like Node.js, that allowed us to take our tooling that we wrap around MongoDB and now port it over to Azure. So we were very excited about that in June when that announcement came out, and we were like, yes, this means that we can take advantage of this new cloud provider, not new, but this new sort of VM capability.
So if I say, you know, new website, and I put it in Western US, and I say I'm going to now make that ASP.NET MVC or WebForms website talk to Mongo, are you in the Western US too?
Yes.
In our data center?
Right now, yes, we are in U.S. West and U.S. East, and we are looking at the rest of the footprint to go and deploy there as well, depending on how the market takes us and where we see the best capability.
Interesting. So if I understand correctly, I could, you know, new VM, make an Ubuntu or a CentOS and do all that myself.
You can, yes.
Or I could say, you know, new add-on MongoLab, get the relationship with MongoLab, and I set it up. Do I see my Mongo VM, or that's all just hidden? I just have an endpoint, and it's handled.
That's correct. You do not see the VM. That actually is something that we manage. The interface that we expose to you as a developer is the MongoDB connector. You can connect with the Mongo shell. We also have a nice user interface API that allows you to add collections and query the data, save the query, and whatnot. But our mantra is to have a nice, clean interface that is a database as a service in the cloud.
And so there is an Azure virtual machine and all that kind of stuff, but you and the elves at MongoLab are handling all that for me.
Yep, we have a huge team of elves that does.
And the latency is minimal because you're in the same data center.
Yes, exactly. Minimal latency.
My buddy is going to like this.
I bet he will.
My buddy is going to be excited about this. Very cool. So, Adria, SendGrid, you guys send email. I can do that.
Yeah.
Why do I need you?
Well, so people can set up their own SMTP relay, but they often encounter problems, everything from blacklisting to having the technical expertise to actually manage and maintain the server, plus just the time. Most people who are hosting on Azure are developers, so they're working on building a product. Mm-hmm. They don't really want to do ops. It's just kind of a side thing. I said to someone earlier today, it's kind of like driving a car. You just need to get to work, so you don't need to build the actual highway to get there. But a lot of people find themselves dealing with all this infrastructure just to make their product and their app work.
That's an interesting idea. I could see where there'd be a market for people who really love driving. They're like, you know, I love driving. I love the feel of the road. I'm going to build my own road. But there's this level where he's like, you know, I just want to get a really nice car. I want a Tesla. You know, I don't even want that. I want a chauffeur. You know, at what level of operations do I really care about?
Yeah, and so the value that people really see besides handing off the delivery aspect are the analytics that we provide. So we also have an event API, so you can find out real time what's happening to the emails. Did they bounce? Were they dropped? Mm-hmm. If they did get delivered, are they being opened and clicked on? And we focus mainly on transactional email. So things you wouldn't think about so much, but password resets, new user accounts, or for some of our customers in the social media space, they're really trying to get people back into the app and increase engagement. So,
interesting. That brings up an interesting point because when I think of email, I have a tendency to think of things in terms of a simple way, like, you know, there's newsletters and this and that. And if you get a couple of duplicates here and there, it doesn't really matter. But transactional email, email that's functional email,
yes,
is a lot more interesting. But you do not only the sending of email, and I guess people get 25,000 emails for free.
They get quite a few with Azure.
Huge amount. But you sign up with SendGrid, you get those for free. But you guys, on this part blew my mind, you'll handle the receiving of email as well.
Yeah, so we have an inbound parse API, and I was just talking with a customer upstairs about it as well. So it's nice because we will parse attachments, subject line, and the body, and then we can post that to a URL for you. So you can basically then have your app take action on that. Some really simple examples would be a to-do list, a ticketing system, things like that.
So that's one of the things that I'm always disappointed when an app doesn't have that, like no reply.
Right.
You know, like if you sign me up for forums and then I can't reply and have it automatically go back into the app, that's where I feel an app has the most polish, really good email responsiveness. And you showed me an application earlier where I could send a music track to an email and you would automatically queue it up into my playlist,
yes,
and it was all running in Azure as well. And you guys all have NuGet package available, so the .NET developer doesn't have to think about these
right.
things.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The one thing that I heard kind of across all three of your kind of pitches there is this idea of analytics, which I think when I'm doing small stuff, I forget about. Right? You made the comment that anybody can set up an email server, then you got to manage it, you got to deal with it, there's transactions, but analytics, how many bounced, how many were bad, why did they bounce, what was going on? There's a whole queue management, and when you're thinking about millions of emails, that analytics becomes a problem. You have an integrated dashboard for me to view all of this stuff?
Yeah, so we have a back-end dashboard, but because of the way our API is structured, you actually can build your own dashboard, and we have a lot of customers do that. Now, I've also met other companies that actually help API providers build third-party dashboards as well. So, but with data, right, you can make decisions, and everyone's trying to make their product successful. So having analytics about customer engagement and behavior it's critical.
I like that idea of without that decision-making data, you can't, like I always say, if you can't measure, you can't cut.
Right.
Right. And I think we make a lot of decisions in business lately just kind of like, you know, the wind is blowing this direction.
That's
I think
right.
I can make that decision. With New Relic, you've got a dashboard.
Yep.
With SendGrid, you've got a dashboard. Can I build dashboards on your dashboard?
You can. Yeah, we have custom dashboards, all that good stuff. We've got the data API. It's interesting because I was thinking about as you were saying that. You think about like cloud services, right? And you think about like normal metal. It takes weeks to spin up. But a cloud service, if you start going in, you start cratering, you can spin up a new cloud service and provision a new site. And like for instance, with New Relic, we have an SLA dashboard where you can literally see is something going to be scalable. You can see if it starts to fall off. You can see the little dot pattern and see if it's condensed or if it's expanded.
So you're saying you can set a business expectation.
You can. Now
and
you can
see whether that is being met or not.
Right. And so if you see something happening in the dashboard, you can go, wow, I see it coming. Let's spin up a new instance of my website. Let's add three more nodes, or let's increase some procs, because you don't want that stuff falling over, right?
See, that's really interesting, because as a developer, I'm always thinking about perf counters and CPU numbers, but there's the business metric, which is an aggregate of those things.
Yep.
You know, like, am I reaching capacity in this database or this data center?
Yeah.
It's one thing to say, oh, I've got 5,000 bounces an email, but is that 50% of my audience that's having a bad experience? And then what am I going to do about that? Now, you guys have this ability to have analytics as well on MongoDB.
Right. We have, the typical statistics that you would have in a database, memory consumed, number of objects, and whatnot. And at the end of the day, though, it's something that we provide as a service to help make sure that the MongoDB database is healthy. And then if you are running out of some critical resource, out of RAM or CPU or whatnot, we actually have an open source project called Dex that actually looks at slow queries, because that's one of the things that you'll see when you start running out of one of the resources, which is the cache RAM. It'll look through your slow queries and actually suggest places where, hey, an index might have helped here. And we're also always improving that. It's something that we've opened out to the community. You don't have to use MongoLab to use it. It's just something that we know that people need as they adopt new technologies. Mm-hmm. And I think new technologies is what makes what we are hearing about around Azure this week so exciting. And I think, again, I was mentioning the embrace of open source, I think, was a really big important component. But I see it in the new technologies, whether it's refactoring and recasting a very well-trusted technology like SMTP, or taking something that's been application manager that you would see in a DVD-ROM that you would get from your vendor and now see it as a SaaS.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, we use SendGrid, and actually I just signed up for the Node.js New Relic
Sweet.
Beta
yeah.
With New Relic. I'm using Node.js for some of the projects that I use, but it's what we're becoming as developers is sort of aggregators of these existing best-of-breed mm-hmm. solutions.
That's right.
And I think when you look at an API, because almost every web service now has a REST API with JSON on it,
mm-hmm.
it's about compositing these components. And to see that Microsoft and Azure now have these add-on components being built in mm-hmm. means that it's even easier for developers to build best-of-breed, best-of-class mm-hmm. applications by snapping these things together.
But snapping things together is great when you're talking about Legos. And I would never use such a simplistic metaphor as Legos in any technical conversation.
But so that's probably trademark.
But the trick about snapping Legos together is that you can count on those Legos to be there and part of the solution. Mm-hmm. But how do I know that you guys aren't going to disappear and then that fundamental aspect of my solution is going to be gone, or that some privacy breach? I mean, there's a web of trust amongst us mm-hmm. because I am cloud sourcing a lot of these different things, but there's new issues of privacy and governance that become concerning to me. And I might wake up one day and find that, MongoLab got hit by a truck or something like that.
Yeah, well, I think whenever you choose a vendor, like even if a vendor that you get a packaged software solution from, there's always risk in outsourcing that developer, outsourcing that part. Or, you look at the supply chain disruptions when there's some sort of natural disaster. There are implicit webs of trust. So as mm-hmm. a business owner, as somebody that's driving the technical architecture of your solution, you have to take a look at those vendors and ask them the hard questions.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? There are going to be a continuum of acceptable risks in these applications that we're building. Now, if you're building some mission-critical thing that flies to Mars and does a reverse, jets thing mm-hmm. to go and fly, okay, maybe you use the older
P5, Pentium 5 or something
that we were
yeah.
talking about,
yeah,
that's
the
radiation
hardened. Yeah.
And okay, got it, and you're a bank, okay. But then there's this other range of applications where you need to be very competitive, mm-hmm. need to move very quickly,
yep.
and say, let's just go and build this thing.
Yep. But yep. Ben, my to-do list application for iPhone is special.
Your to-do list is absolutely the most
special,
and I am so glad that I paid the 99 cents for it.
Well, and
I'm waiting for it on Windows 8.
Yeah, I know you are.
So due diligence is important, and definitely talking to people who have done it before you. I think especially yep. in the Bay Area, we've had a lot of success with local meetup groups, user groups, people sharing case studies and things like that. And, just sitting down with those folks and saying, what'd you learn about, building your product that went right, or where you hosted it, those sort of things, and really get some feedback. And do testing.
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
don't launch, production.
That's a really good point, Adria, because you're bringing up this idea that even though it's this giant, infinitely scalable cloud out there, we're picking vendors largely on word of mouth.
Yep.
Because that means so much now, right?
Yeah.
It's like Yelp for cloud vendors.
Well, it does, because
a recommendation means a lot to me. I do my due diligence,
yeah.
but if someone that I know is successful is using a tool, then I feel better about
that. That is the classic social proof, though.
Yeah.
It is.
It is. Because, you're dealing with this new sense, right? We have a new developer law among us, right? And it's get stuff done and then learn to get stuff done better, right? And that's the bottom line. And all of us as unboxed coders, right, we're all delivering these kind of web apps and stuff. We all want to be like that. We all want to get stuff done. Not that we want to be the superhero, this ninja, or whatever. It's just that we want to get good stuff done. So you're not gonna hoodwink somebody and go, hey, check out this terrible service and use this over here. No, because it's all about implicit understanding of we're all kind of a family. We're all
exactly.
trying to get some good stuff done.
Yep.
So we've got folks online, and make sure that you're telling your friends about us online. It's our last part of the show here at Channel 9 Live. So let's do some questions, and you can put your questions right there on CH9. mongodb.ms. Hector Luciano is asking about limitations. Is there a limitation in size for MongoDB? Is there like a trial that gives you one size? How big can these things get? And is there a limitation based on the operating system client?
So let me tease the question part a little bit. So MongoDB itself as a technology generally doesn't have any built-in limits into the size of the database. There are some technologies, the most important and relevant one here is called auto sharding that allows you to break up the database to many smaller clusters. But a MongoDB in Azure run by MongoLab right now, we're limited to 500 megabytes of data because we're in preview mode, because the underlying VMs are in preview mode. Eventually, we'll be getting up to the multiple gigabytes and hopefully to the terabyte range that we see on other cloud providers right now. But today, it's 500 megabytes. It is free, so you can't really complain too much about the price.
Can't beat that.
But because the VMs, again, underneath the Linux VMs aren't yet GA, we don't have anything beyond 500.
But the plan is big things.
Big picture. Is going to be tens, then in hundreds of gigabytes, and then to terabytes.
Okay. And actually, speaking of scale, I mean, how big can my application get? And can I throw as much as you can handle? Could I push things harder than you can handle the New Relic?
So far, we haven't found anybody do that.
Seriously?
Yep.
That's a hardcore answer. You
should
have just said, nah, man.
Well, I mean, yeah. Nerd life, man.
Nerd life.
Yeah. I mean, we haven't found that to be true.
Mm-hmm.
Given that we are collecting, again, the 18 billion metrics a day and processing those things, that would be
a
great problem
such
to have.
That's, in my mind, I'm just kind of thinking here as host, like, that's just such a stupid large number. 18 billion? Like, is that like as many tweets as there are?
Yeah.
Like, it's just a huge amount of data.
Yeah, I think it's like as many Xbox accounts out there are, something like that. I don't know what it is. But
you're pushing a pile of email, and we were talking earlier that you can do not just, password reset emails, but you can do complicated things, multi-part emails,
yes.
Attachments, and stuff like that.
Yeah, newsletters, you can segment your lists. I think for us, when it comes to scalability, we get that question, how fast can you scale?
Yeah.
And so often it's about educating our customers about how email works and how servers work when they're talking to each other about email. So it's usually not a limitation on the part of SendGrid or our servers.
Mm-hmm.
It's more about kind of scaling up, warming up the IP. So there's a lot of education involved. But I mean, we have people sending tens of millions of emails per month, and we're approaching 5 billion overall. So.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. And I understand that this idea of trust is important, particularly around email, because mm-hmm. if your servers, which send all this email, are not trusted by the larger internet, and consequently, and I'm not sending spam through you, mm-hmm. that all makes you, that would make you look bad. Like if I became a spammer and I decide I want to hire SendGrid to send my spam, that would mess up that relationship.
That definitely affects reputation. So we have some checks and balances in place before we bring people onto the service. And we have an abuse and monitoring department, which is nice because they kind of keep a watchful eye over everything. Again, customer education is important. But for example, like we own all of our IP addresses. So once you get to our silver plan, you actually have a dedicated IP address, and that helps with reputation. Also, we have relationships with ESPs, all the major ones, AOL, MSN, Yahoo, mm-hmm. things like that, but also companies that specifically focus on email reputation, like ReturnPath.
Mm-hmm.
So it usually works out pretty good, and we see customers, and they're usually just like really happy, like, oh, SendGrid, you've just changed my life, so it's pretty positive feedback overall, or like the guy I met upstairs, he's here from Europe, and he actually has a mobile device that encourages people to participate in like March Madness mm-hmm. and pick their teams and things like that. And so the focus of email for him is to not only encourage people to get back into the app and participate, but also go back to the pubs where they originally selected the teams. So we talked about kind of the aspect of that and how he could use additional logic to, if someone hasn't been back, to reselect their teams, or even with a password reset. SendGrid has the ability to talk to his app, and then they could say, hey, we've been missing you. It's been a week. Why don't you come back?
Stuff like that is huge to build relationships. I've heard so many things about people using email smartly to build that relationship with people, and you got to be really careful, because if it's like every week, it's like, go back, please. We didn't, we noticed you didn't click OK, or whatever. That's too much.
Yeah.
But there is something to be said for that personal relationship, because that is your only real. We have notification services, but that's your notification service. That's your line to talk to the to the developer?
Relationship's huge. So that's the only thing we talk about too with our customers, or is about building a relationship through transactional email. Mm-hmm. Really, it's just about the customer service cycle. You know, someone checks out your product, maybe it's word of mouth, right? Then they try it out, maybe they start on a free account or a trial, then once they become a paying customer, you know, there's a sense of entitlement, which they should have, that you are gonna deliver on your product. And so how do you kind of maintain that satisfaction, keep checking in with them? I mean, we always look at API usage, but, you know, having that relationship mm-hmm. is.
Now, you mentioned that you're in the Bay, and I hear a lot of stuff, and I read Hacker News and Y Combinator, and I hear all about startups in the Bay and this and that. Are these SaaSes just things that that hipsters in the Bay Area are using? Because at the same time, I'm here like, oh, yeah, this startup is a combination of all these different startups. But then this old company, this old brick and mortar, is moving to the web, and they hear, oh, we can't put that in the cloud. We can't trust our customer data in the cloud. How do we convince them that this is not so scary? Ben, I mean...
Well, you know, we have customers that run the gamut. We have, you know, Fortune 500 companies as well as, you know, the Bay Area hipster companies that use us. And it's kind of interesting. Obviously, for startup companies that don't have a big IT investment, it makes natural sense to be able to outsource this, because then you focus your precious developer hours not carrying pagers and being woken up at 3 in the morning when something breaks, but rather focusing on those differentiated features, as I mentioned. Mm-hmm. For big organizations, it's actually kind of interesting. The profile that we've seen is that usually it's some sort of departmental project. Maybe it's experimental. Maybe it's going to run for only a few weeks in some public environment. Mm-hmm. But you know, they don't want to run through the internal IT gamut in order to stand up this database, which might be foreign to some of their operations. So yeah, we have to sign papers and say we aren't going to do this, blah blah blah, all that, you know, security checks, turn your head and cough. But once we do that, then they're like, okay, we'll go and run. So we are beginning to see. At least in our own little world, what would be these large organizations adopt the cloud, and it's just out of pure productivity. I mean, a big company is not immune to competitive mm-hmm. pressure.
Do you find yourself sitting down with customers, Nick, just like, you know, guys, it's really okay. It's a real business. We really mean, you know, yeah. like this is. I always have to have a Star Trek reference at some point during the day.
Awesome.
So I know you're going to get it too, because I've got this with you right now.
In there.
You remember when Kirk and Spock, Adria, when they went down to the planet that was handled by gangsters, and they pretty much took over the whole planet, and somewhere around the end of it, one of the gangsters was like, hang on a second, you know, we've been watching this show for 45 minutes, and I've only ever seen you and you. And Kirk is like, no, man, there's like 400 guys up on the ship there. There's like 400 guys up there. I was like, I have never seen anyone else, you know, like two guys with phasers took over the entire planet. Mm. I feel like with cloud vendors, it's a little bit like that because, frankly, Ben and Nick and Adria, I've only ever just met you guys.
Yep.
I don't know how many people you got back in the ship there. It's pretty much it. How do I know it's not just you in the garage?
Right.
Are you meeting with people and just having to kind of walk them through that? I mean, I know selling the cloud isn't your job,
right.
But it's a fearful proposition that you're getting into.
Yeah, see, what we're finding is more along the lines of this kind of concept of full stack dev, right? And these are the guys, you know, that just go out and go, you know what, I love my sysadmin, I love my DBA, I love the guys piece the stuff together, but really, I'm a dev, dude. I want to get stuff done, right? I want to rock it. And the best way I can do that is if I start spinning stuff up. Mm-hmm. And the key to that is, all to kind of boil all that down, is that when they approach us, there's this kind of anointing, if you will, when they're first concerned about, they're like, wow, how's this even happening? What's the performance hit to my app? What is going on? And literally after they see what they can get out, their heads explode first, and then they go, wow, that I need that, because that would be my Mr. Spock.
Yeah.
You know, I'm Kirk, and New Relic would be my Mr. Spock in my app.
Right, that is their dashboard. That is their dashboard. So once, do you think that it's the value of the product that will eventually bring, kind of tease the fear out of them, and they're like, okay, I get it now.
Absolutely. I mean, because you take the full picture of the cloud, right? It's already kind of scary and nebulous, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, cloud. It's cloudy.
Cloud, yeah, it's nebulous.
See what you did there? That was nice.
Yeah. So, I mean, how do you get around stuff that's scary and nebulous? You bring visibility into dashboards, into email, and pipe it through somebody that you're certain, you know, the people have used in the past and that are proven. And we, as New Relic, are totally proven through all sorts of platforms and languages. And likewise, SendGrid. I use SendGrid. I love it. I love Mongo.
This is like a whole love fest here.
I'll look at it later.
I promised myself I wouldn't cry.
I remember having a conversation with a developer years ago, back in the VBX, OCX days, and he was like, yeah, I'm going to, you know, we were working in cars and car data, and he's like, I'm going to write a better calendar control. You know, there's this vendor. No, I don't trust those guys. I was like, well, we are really good at cars and car data, and this vendor's $400 to get this calendar control. You have 4 hours. If you can write me the world's greatest tested, packaged, prepared calendar control in 4 hours, then we'll ship that. Otherwise, I'm buying this guy. That same kind of distrust of the vendor. Like, I don't know this calendar control guy. You know, it's the same thing that's happening in the cloud now. Do you think? But that turned into a huge industry of vendor controls. And you don't think about it when you buy a tree view. You test it and you say, oh, that's great. I love that control. I think people pick their jQuery plugins quicker than they'll pick a server-side solution.
Well, you know, I think that's kind of interesting. But, you know, I think people are
trying
to figure out.
Tell me it's not interesting, Ben. It's okay.
No, it's not interesting.
are these services like the new vendors, and we just need to trust these vendors?
They very much are. In fact, it's fascinating to watch, especially now that we're all part of the Azure store, but you look at other platform as a service add-on stores, whether it's, for example, you know, Heroku is sort of the canonical model, Engine Yard also has spun one up, and AppBot, you know, all of the platform as a service models, and I think we are all in them. In fact, I always see all three of us kind of, all right, we're first, next, right? And it is very interesting because it is becoming the distribution channel for these other add-on services. Mm. In fact, what's also very fascinating, and Azure doesn't have this yet, but a lot of the other ones, they have a command line interface. Of course, there's Azure, you know, create, blah. There isn't yet an Azure add-on create, you know, MongoLab, Azure create, you know, New Relic, SendGrid.
There should be, and there will be.
But here's the fascinating thing about that. That charges somebody's credit card.
From the command line?
Yeah. So it is command line interface commerce. Command line commerce,
I don't know about that. That's like one click. I'm going to patent that.
That is a command keystroke. It is a keystroke commerce, rather.
So I want to get to that level.
So
it's in-app purchasing.
It is. And I mean, there's actually a company called AppDirect that's actually building sort of this app store around not only, you know, they mainly focus on SaaS type applications, but they're also going towards platform as a service too. So it's very interesting to see the economic market sort of grow around these add-on things. Yeah. And so just like you have these VB, view controllers and things like that market, you're very much seeing, you know, along with all of our brothers and sisters, represent this new type of access to developers, access to markets. And in the flip side, we're delivering value to them because it is taking off a huge amount of pain and work, whether it's visibility or dealing with email and responses and bounces or dealing with backups and monitoring in these services. It lets people move to the next level up. It lets developers build more.
And what I'd add to that is that a lot of this discussion has seemed to focus around kind of the creators pushing up, it also needs to come from the top down buy-in. You know, I talked with people here and at several other events where using like code control, version control, right? And what are you using to commit your code? And being agile within your organization.
Yeah.
It's just...
it's the willpower.
It's about concepts.
Right. You have to have buy-in at the top. Like, you know, we value source control. We value metrics. You know, we also value our IT people not wasting their time keeping an SMTP server up or fooling around with our Mongo databases.
And so hearing those stories from peers, regardless of where you're at in the company, I think is important. They bring the stories back, and then they try something new. So like SendGrid, we recently, last year, became agile throughout the entire organization. And that was very attractive to me as someone who's technical, and I appreciate order and structure, versus, you know, I've had friends, you know, it's 10, 11 at night, what are you doing? Still trying to push this out. I mean, that's just no fun, so.
Yeah, thanks, yeah. Yeah, you know, we can't minimize though the importance of the scary part of it for people. I think it seems odd to me that I walk into a grocery store and I'll buy a gallon of milk. I have no idea where it came from. I don't know who made it. I don't really care.
Well,
I drink it.
You'll be the first to die when the zombies come.
Right, of course. Well, but I'll have to accept that when it gets there.
Yeah.
And so then I realized that as a dev, my goal is to get stuff done. It's like to buy the milk, right? And I want to get stuff done. So why don't I treat these services as such? Especially since most of them are free. Most of them are mm-hmm. low friction. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They snap right in. You got a beautiful NuGet package, and it works. Like, why wouldn't I do that? Why wouldn't I experience it?
To the point that we just probably didn't come on Twitter here, Stephen is saying, well, he's got applications that are cloud and on-premises. What mm. You're going to bring your milk production in on-premises. So for some people, they have on-premises mm-hmm. abilities. Mm-hmm. For some of you may or may not be prepared. There may be a SendGrid Enterprise. Like, we know there's GitHub, and then there's GitHub Enterprise mm-hmm. Edition. Are you guys looking at ways to do that? Like, I could run the SendGrid offering, except in my private government little box? Do you think that that's an important aspect of the cloud, private clouds?
Yeah, I think it definitely is important. I mean, look at Atlassian as well. They offered self-hosted, but they realized having it online for people who don't want to manage that environment, so they went the reverse. It's not on our roadmap right now, but, definitely we've taken a lot of feedback, sent that over to our product people. So definitely hearing that a lot here at this conference. So
yeah, I think that there's something about Microsoft people that are sometimes there. They just kind of like their things.
Yes, they like to hug all of their software and hardware.
I think that's changing, though, because of open source, right? I mean, like, it's so amazing to me this whole past year that literally they open sourced ASP.NET. EF is open sourced. I mean, I just love the fact that this community, this .NET community, this Windows community is opening up. And I see the excitement around Azure, and I see that probably because of this open source mentality that's being pushed. And I mean, like as far I would think that if you do have this closed solution where it's all installed on premise, I know that solves a problem. But
well, it may be attractive now. The question is, will it be attractive in a couple of years?
Yeah, exactly. And I think it detracts from the overall picture of, hey, we need to get more agile. We need to get faster about the things we do. And if you start pulling stuff out of the cloud, we're just going to go backwards.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean that's my opinion. But I think
it's tough though because people want dashboards, people want email management, people want database management, they want these things, but for some reason they either truly need it to be on premises or they really feel that they do. And then you have to kind of find out, like, is there really a true business reason for this?
Yeah.
Or is it just a feeling of discomfort?
Well, to answer the question directly about MongoDB, MongoDB is a GPL licensed bit of code. So of course you can always run it on whatever iron that has it compiles to. So you always have that option. What I think the public cloud and what something like Mongo Lab represents is that you can have some of your cake and also eat it too, right? Yes, you are trading off some of the control by using a public cloud, but yeah, you can also run it private if you want. Maybe you might not get the full set of tools. I mean, we're open sourcing some of our tools around it, but then you can also get the benefits in the public cloud, the instant provisioning, the backup service, and whatnot. And I think, again, it's going to be a continuum. We'll see a continuum for types of businesses that need to have absolute control, and there are businesses that can take advantage of some of these new ways of doing things. Now, if you unwind the reel a bit, remember when PCs first came out? I mean, this was a bit of computing technology that had nothing to do with the central IT organization, and it was an absolute game changer in the way that people got work done. So yes, there's always going to be a boundary of like, okay, so what is this new thing, this cloud thing, et cetera, but where the technologies provide value, the organization that is the marketplace will continue to work that out and do it in kind of a hybridized fashion too. So that's I think what we're seeing with cloud. So very natural set of questions, but we're adopting it as we go.
Cool. Well, we have about 6 minutes left. It's getting a little sad here. It's going to bring it down a little bit here on ch9.ms. And I hope that people who have any questions, this is your last 6 minutes. This is your chance to ask the guys a question. Because what I want to know about is what TV shows that you're watching this season. Mm. I want to close on a high note.
Yes. So I moved from Texas, and my
only TV there.
Yeah. Pretty much no.
No.
In the my only impression of Portland, where we inevitably ended up.
You're in Portland.
I am now. Yeah.
We'll hang out. We'll have
right,
tacos.
Right on. Fist bump. My only impression of it was Portlandia, and.
Portlandia is required to become a citizen of Portland.
I just realized that. Like my card was punched.
That's true. So, yeah.
Gosh. And the other one, the Grimm. And so that was
and
my
the
full
other
picture.
One? Okay, you're going to have to leave the city at this point because you don't get to say that.
Is it time to watch?
Grimm, we're very proud of Grimm.
Grimm is
Leverage,
awesome.
Leverage, we film a lot of shows.
Leverage. But yeah, those are my two primary ones because I'm trying to catch up on the Portland culture.
understand what I'm supposed to be doing.
You also need to start your own brewery in your garage. Well, that's also required.
Yeah.
Very, very small brewery. Only one bottle a year.
Well, I've got a big family, so they might be able to do a little work, and
That's going to work out great.
Good.
Ben, is there anything particular that...
Yeah, I'm a little embarrassed to admit, but I kind of like Storage Wars.
Really?
Good one. Yeah.
Not a Hoarders fan, though. You like Storage Wars?
No, Storage Wars, because then, it's getting rid of this stuff. It's sort of the garbage collection, and there's always, some little nugget and prize in there.
What media do we need to get on? Storage Wars are grim. Pick a side.
Yeah, right.
Well, to go off what Ben said, I would have to say there is a hoarding show around animals, and I'm just always curious, how many cats can you fit into one bedroom? And it's really amazing. So that would probably be my pick.
My choices aren't that bad anymore, right? Are we good?
I was watching.
I like setting the bar.
Yeah, I was watching the Mindy Project last night. Yes, thank you. Kind of in bed sideways with my tablet, and because that's just how I roll. Yeah. And in the thing, she's just sitting there and she's watching TV, and then this cat walks across her lap, and then she starts petting it. And she's like, "Who are you?" And she's like, "I don't have a cat." It's like, "Get out of here, you filthy animal." She it was just such a cute moment. She's like home alone and she's petting the cat, and "Wait a second, I don't have a cat. How did you get in here?" That's kind of how I deal with pets. I'm not much of a cat person. I'm sorry. Do you guys think that being in the Azure store is a good idea?
Yeah.
I mean, is it a split? It's a split thing, right? We take some of your money, don't we?
Yes, but it's worth it.
It's worth it.
It's like I said, it's a sales channel, so it's a distribution channel, just like when you distribute, through Tiger Direct or something like that. But it's I think we're going to see differentiation among, what are the different components that the sales channel provides. Is it just the fulfillment? Is it the billing? Is it the support?
Yeah.
And those will get decomposed and figure out the different parts of the value chain there. But right now, everybody does largely, a fixed, whatever. I think it's the App Store and Apple set the 30%. So that's generally what people do.
So folks can play with your stuff now.
Yep.
You're all in NuGet. You're all in the store. You're all under add-ons right now.
Yep. Got it.
And as someone who was saying to me, the store, I don't want to go to a separate place. It's actually right there in the new dial. You just get new add-ons, and you guys are right there.
New store, and then, add-ons when you want to go and manage it. Mm-hmm. And you can create as many databases as you want.
And there's single sign-on, right? I can just click, and then I move kind of seamlessly between the two.
You can throw in your credentials when you go in to configure, or you can hard-code your credentials for SendGrid.
That's
good.
SSO, that's right. We just want to make sure we, reach... Because our point is, if devs get a hold of our software, we believe that it's going to make them better. And you're already really good, but, it's like... Just as a feature, because we'll give it free forever if you want. That's obviously poor business model, but not the bigger versions. But it's just a tool that they can use to get better at development, and that's our point. That's we're hoping the bigger reach we have, and that's the Azure store. It gives us that reach. We're gonna help people.
Very cool, very cool. Folks can go up there right now. You can get an Azure account for free. You can make 10 websites. You can make 10 mobile services. You've got a SQL database. You can now get MongoLab. You can get New Relic. You can do SendGrid all right now in the Azure store right now. I believe it's U.S. only, and then it's going to be spreading out very, very quickly beyond that. Some of these things are in preview, and they're going to get bigger, bigger, bigger. So the momentum continues around Azure.
Yep.
Yeah.
Thanks
indeed.
So much, guys, for chatting with me.
Thanks.
Thank you.
It's Channel 9 now. Take these here and throw it at that. Where's my Channel 9 man? Hit the camera. Destroy the camera. There we go.
Yes.